news anchor.
I was thinking you look like something else that Ryan would anchor. Shuffling your pages. And here is your host, Mr. Craig Hart. He says everything. It's on an auto cue. He says it all.
All right, now I've taken my tea down. We'll have an update on the bed later.
Oh, yeah, we do. There was a question that came through.
Yeah, later.
About the bed.
There was a question, yeah?
Yeah.
Right, good morning, all. Welcome to episode 6 of the Dopcast. It's a special episode today as we are parting ways with our ex-host, Mr. Peter Pedlow.
Why is today only special? They're all special. Have you not listened to them all, Craig?
I think we judge it on the likes and comments. So, as I said, episode 6. So it's myself, Craig Hart.
Myself, Matt Howells.
And our parting ex-host.
Me, Peter Pedlow.
So today we're going to have a little bit of fun. We shall give you a bit of an update on what we have seen in the market over the last month or so. I'm sure there'll be a little bit of electric cars, as we do love that. We'll give you an update on what's happening in the world and my bed, because I got a new bed. So, Pete.
Yes.
A little bit of a download on your life with Close Brothers.
Yes, my life. 5 long, beautiful years. Yes, Craig, that's exactly right.
And you enjoyed it?
thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been quite a challenge during the 5 years. Yeah, absolutely.
How many, was it one recession you've worked through here? Lending through the cycle, all of that?
Probably more than one recession when you take into consideration, obviously, the global pandemic.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting 5 years, to be fair.
Good, good. And we won't say where you're going, but you are staying within the industry.
Staying within the industry, folks, and keep a wee eye out, or there'll be a link for the new Peter Pedlow podcast in the not-too-distant future.
Okay. So, moving on. Matt, what are we seeing in the world of automotive recently?
Automotive, which matter are we going to face into?
Should we look at sales first?
So U sales, UK U sales transactions grow, I guess, but the reality is I think Q4 we'll start to see that kind of plateau out, as we have done.
Yeah.
In the last month or so, in regards to that, as consumer demand also softens, that isn't something that's new. That's a consistent approach year on year that we see in relation to that.
Maybe a bit more this year though, right?
You know, you do that, you talk about the cost of living crisis, there's always elements to face into around that. And as I guess EV, was that has certainly suppressed in the last month.
Yeah.
That also takes a percentage of the market as well, and that is a growing area of the market.
Yeah.
However, I'm conscious we always resort
we love it. That. We love it, yeah. It's the future.
But it's interesting to, as we discussed earlier, to see the valuation change on that 3-year EV element.
What does that look like for our listeners?
It's actually down equivalent to 3% in terms of EV. So a drop of 3.6 to be exact, I believe. So equivalent of £1,200.
Yeah.
And if we look at that in terms of trade valuations across the board, 3.7%, circa £1,200. And if you face that into used market, which is 0.4, which is is just in line with trends, about £250 as a fall away in valuation. So, but you know, it's a big shift from an EV. And it actually, you know, I'm going to mention it. We talk about Tesla a lot on this call.
Absolutely,
yeah. Yeah,
they've taken a massive
boost. That's seen some of the biggest variations.
I know.
So anything from, I believe, the Model S, 7%.
Yeah, yeah.
3 to 7% subject to the Tesla model. So
yeah.
I guess, you know, but the reality of that, as new become used, there is now more EVs in the market.
Yeah.
Consumer confidence has taken a hit of late.
Actually, sorry, on that, new, more supply in the market on EVs. On my drive up on the M6 this morning, I saw four lorries full of brand new Teslas.
To go and sell the showroom?
Because I think they all come from Southampton, right? You know, the boat goes around Southampton. But anyway, sorry, Matt.
Yeah, so just that's a brief overview and update around from a used sales perspective.
Actually, on that, so since or in between the last podcast and this one, the UK government decided that they were going to road tax electric from 2025.
Don't think it's really a huge surprise. Come 2025, 50% of the market's going to be electric vehicles. They have to do that. I suppose from a company car driver, you know, the one piece that people can have an element of confidence in is that it's not going to face a huge spike in benefit in kind between now and then. I think they've confirmed it'll be 1% per year, so just small incremental gains. But I suppose in many ways, going back to the original point that Matt was chatting about, five of the top 10 worst performing vehicles for used cars were electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Electric vehicles have never seen as big a drop. And it's not, I know obviously we've talked about Tesla. There are a huge amount of supply now coming back into the market for Tesla, which is absolutely great. But the e-tron's in there. And if you think of where the market has gone from a cost of living in the last 3-4 months where electricity's gone through the roof, as somebody who drives an e-tron, you know, coming now into winter, get into the car this morning at 4 o'clock this morning on a full charge, it's telling me to do 131 miles. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, that will start to feed into consumers.
Yeah.
The other thing probably impacting the likes of the Audi e-tron is they've announced the new Q8 e-tron, which can do up to 330 miles on a charge. So clearly some customers will be going, I need to get rid of this. You know, I'm going to get my ordering for that. Dealers will be going, I need to get rid of that. You know, this is challenging stock, and it absolutely will be challenging stock moving forward. You know, customers will want the biggest bang for their buck. So it's range that will cause a problem in the used car market, and it's oversupply in the new car market. And Tesla, you could rock up tomorrow and get yourself away. You know, that's where Tesla now is.
Yeah.
Available, right? Yeah.
They are at that point probably for the first time ever, right? Because I waited 6 months, maybe a year for my one, on both of mine.
How long did you wait for your second Tesla away?
Just a couple of weeks.
For those of you living at home, for those of you at home listening, Craig got himself a nice all black, should have been black everything, but it rocked up with the white interior.
Oh yeah, white, horrible.
And he nearly vomited on his driveway.
Yeah, rejected it immediately. So when we talk about...
Was that a coal-powered Tesla, that one?
Was it a what? Coal-powered? Yeah, version one.
Is that why you sent it back?
Yeah. I didn't want to pay the tax on that. So when we're talking about, obviously we've found our way smoothly into electric, as we always do, but let's pull ourselves back into new car sales around other manufacturers. There's been some drops within the data. Obviously SMMT released their data over the last couple of days around, November, year on year, etc. But there's been some real surprises, I suppose, in the brands. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't looked hugely. I suppose the overview for the new car market, it's up 24-25% year on year, which on the face of it looks great. We've had 3-4 months now of growth, but we're comparing it to what was a car crash Q3, Q4 last year. And actually the devil, it will always has been and always will be in the detail. And if you look at where the growth was in November, it's not in retail. Retail market's up 1% year on year. So clearly, are we in a push market or are we in a pull market? You know, for the last year or more, we've been in a pull market, which is customers dropping in the showrooms, wanting cars, wanting supply. But if you look at where the numbers have come from in the last month, Motability up 48%, fleet vehicles. Fleet up 31%, demos up 41%, and other, so vehicles with no end user, up 127%. Mm-hmm. And those vehicles that have no end user are typically rental. They're typically, you know, some potentially company vehicles just being bought en masse, maybe for pool cars or something along those lines. But, you know, when retail is only up 1%, that highlights probably the challenge that the market's facing for the next 6-7 months. And we know loads of manufacturers have big order banks for retail customers, which is great. And some of those customers may potentially, you know, want to wait until March or have to wait until February or whatever the case may be, depending on lead times. But the market for the last year and a half, manufacturers have been very lucky and been able to divert the product to where they were, which is for retail customers to maximize their profitability. But now they're starting to use those channels where they're not really going to make an awful lot of money on. And I think it's just, it's a fascinating sort of sea change in the last couple of months, just to see what's happening.
I suppose that takes us perfectly on to kind of like the new kind of franchise manufacturer setup, right? That's happening. Obviously, we've got some noise around it.
The agency model?
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Yeah. And I guess that's interesting to see different manufacturers' approach to that. So, obviously, I observed yesterday around, obviously, Stellantis Group, they've delayed their launch of agency model until by a further 6 months.
Yeah.
And forgive me for the brands, but I know it's across their commercial element that they're rolling that out with. That's delayed by 6 months. Yet, obviously, Mercedes go live in January with their agency model.
Yes.
So, and I guess it's always that case of, you know, first across the line and the impact that has on their operations.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, Volkswagen were in AM Online. Did you see that in the last 24 hours? Pete, did you see it?
Couldn't possibly comment.
Okay. So basically, Volkswagen Group has rolled out a new leadership structure across its five brands, with direct sales roles introduced to reflect its move to agency model for selling new and commercial vehicles in the UK. So it doesn't say, from what I can see, when they're going to look at starting this, but I think, when did you say Mercedes are starting? January?
By my understanding, yeah.
Is that in the UK or Europe?
Europe, I believe.
Yeah, so I'd imagine a lot of eyes are going to be on such a big brand like that, right? They'll have to try and see whether they're making a success off it or changes.
And it's also, I think, get your guys' views on this, right? We talk about the acquisition of certain companies as well. There's been some that have withdrawn from acquisition off the subject and the nature of their business models as well. So there's been some acquisitions, but some have actually retracted from proceeding with pre-agreed purchases in the marketplace.
Arnold Clark
is a typical example. So I'm sure that has an impact around their business model and that acquisition piece.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Pete?
Yeah, I think what you will see probably across the next 18 months, as a lot of manufacturers move into the agency model, those smaller kind of family-run dealerships will probably struggle to kind of get some form of return. And it will be the likes of Arnold Clark, you know, Pendragon, Virtue, Marshall, who just start gobbling up whatever's left of those family-run independents. They will get...
It's a shame, really, isn't it? Because they are few and far between.
Yeah, you will. And I think the interesting piece is, if you look at, you know, AMG as an OEM is a really interesting one, because when they first came into the UK, it was small family-run businesses with really old showrooms who they kind of partnered up with because nobody else really wanted to really get on board. And if you look at where they've kind of moved in the last year, you've got all the big groups sucking up as many AMG franchises as they can, because they realize, firstly, there's consumer demand. Secondly,
market share is increasing for AMG, right?
And you know, one of the new electric manufacturers bid to come into the UK have just signed up with Arnold Clark, and the Frog one that signed up with Peter Vardy, can't remember their name, but typically they're 2 years ago, their only inroad into the UK market would have been with a small family run business, where there would have been maybe minimal investment from that family to take on another provider. So, interesting shift in dynamics.
So it's funny, obviously, you mentioned about MG. So for November's registrations, MG outsold brands like Mini, Peugeot, Land Rover, you know, Honda. There's some big brands here that they're outselling at the moment. I think you've got to take a hat off to them. I think that's down to their electric range, right?
Yeah. I don't get too sucked up into market share at the minute, and I wouldn't do, even looking backwards over the last year, because it really comes down to whoever has supply.
Yeah.
You know, MG have been very, very good at building cars and getting them over to the markets where they can make the most money.
Where do they build their cars?
China.
Right.
So they are Chinese. Obviously, MG were Rover many, many years ago, but they were bought by the Chinese a period of time ago, so they are built in China and shipped across. But great vehicles.
But it's interesting, they actually talk about market share on MG, they've actually gone backwards year on year as an overall portfolio. So perception isn't always the reality.
But you know, they were that oversubscribed come March time. I think it was the end of March, they actually stopped taking orders for vehicles because they just we can't fulfill anything anymore. You know, and to be a manufacturer and to be in that position where you're oversubscribed, you know, that's a great place to be when you've got factories to kind of maximize your output. What a great way to be, to have, you know,
order books are full, right? Just ain't got enough parts to be building them.
But then, is it fair to say with that comes wait time and lead time? If, for example, you know, certain brands and manufacturers, there is that circa 12 months, you know, that impatient consumer that will then diversify and change their purchase angle and move into an alternative vehicle as a result. There's a percentage of market that they have to be mindful around that approach as well.
Yeah. Again, some interest movements on that recently. So obviously some of you in this room waited a considerable period of time for your vehicles. Obviously, Matt, you've been waiting since 1932 for your X5, but you eventually...
So in episode 5, did he get the car? Had he had it? Or is this...
I can't remember.
I think it...
When did you get the car?
I got the car a month ago, yeah.
So you wouldn't have got it then, whenever we recorded the last
Correct.
One?
Wow. Mm-hmm. For our avid listeners, Matt has finally received his...
Correct.
His X5 new vehicle.
In white.
Absolutely.
Privacy glass.
Correct.
Rocking around Cardiff, gets plenty of funny visits or funny looks.
Getting to the destination for this morning's 9:30 call so I could be here and be physical as opposed to having to charge on the that's all I'm saying.
We'll see how long that lasts. There's an e-tron coming across the wheels in the next 2 weeks.
With a £3,000 depreciation on that, I'm not so sure I'd want that.
50 range battery on it.
Absolutely. So how is the car anyway?
It's great. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
how many miles are you getting, you know, from a plug-in?
It's 57 miles.
Are you getting on a plug-in?
It's a very poor line, Mr. Bergman.
I'm sitting right beside you, Matt.
But I'm in.
What sort of home charger have you got?
With a company policy of 2025 that we move fully transition.
I think you found that.
Oh, he loves this line, doesn't he? Loves
policy is 2022, pretty much now. You were very lucky to have slipped in there. It's maybe not about what you know, but about who you know.
And I would
nick that.
I would question a number of people. Here's a question for you both: who are in that EV vehicle? Who would rather be in that hybrid asset?
Everybody with the exception of Craig.
Correct. Thank you very much. So I think I've made the right call there, gents, in my approach to that. So.
But you're not an early adopter, though. You know, guy, your time of life never would adopt anything early.
You assess the situation.
Grandpa.
Assess the situation, Pete.
I don't need to worry about depreciation on the vehicle, do I?
No.
That's the difference from a perspective of fleet versus... Yeah. Yeah. You know, private.
Cool.
One team there, eh?
Yeah.
Are you worrying about the profitability of the business?
Yeah. I'm okay, Jack.
It's not my car. Eh? Anyway, good times. Right, new cars then. What else?
Craig, what's your view on the new car market? What are you seeing?
So, I suppose...
Hybrid Tesla in November?
Tesla, what are we talking? Let's have a look at brand market share. So I believe from what I looked at earlier, so Tesla sold 6,000, just over 6,000, well, just over 6,000 units in November. And if we look at a change versus 2021, it doubled. So they doubled the amount of registrations from November 21 to 22, which is a Polestar.
And I think if you looked at, and I don't have the stats, so forgive me, but if you looked at the of those battery electric vehicles, how many of them were going retail versus how many of them were going fleet,
yeah,
I think it would be scary.
Yeah.
I think it would be scary, considering, you know, the adoption of fully electric by 2035. And I know that is still some way off, but the fact there is no incentives, we know what they do in Norway. You know, Norway have absolutely 90% of their vehicles are now completely electric, and that's down to the huge tax incentives that they've put in play.
So November year-on-year petrol for new registrations is up 15%. In a lot of months, we've kind of seen petrol going down, haven't we, previously, year-on-year registrations. But obviously, the data here is showing that petrol is up by about, 7,500 additional registrations month on month. Diesel, Matt, you see the diesel?
Yeah, absolutely. That's down 5.6%, right?
Yeah.
Dirty diesel, as we like to say, but the, you know, the fall away isn't probably to the levels to be expected.
No.
If I'm being truthful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it'd have been a bit more, Pete.
On diesel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, if you probably look at who's banned those 5,605 diesels, there's probably 4,000 registered in Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Just keeping the diesel train going.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Because it is, you know, fascinating when you look at our insight documentation and the breakdown of the new car and the used car market, and you just see how reliant Northern Ireland is as a whole on the old fossil fuels. It's because we've got three chargers. It's three more than Wales, isn't that right, Matt?
Very true. Very true.
It's none in Wales.
Infrastructure, but let's not get me started there.
No, let's not venture in that one again. We all know that the infrastructure needs to improve. I think not just for one particular brand, but you know, the UK government bringing this in, right? And I think the UK government are probably going to get a bit of heat towards them when it comes towards 2025 when they start doing the road tax, because you're going to want consumers shouting that they need charging availability, whether it be in street level, you know, where we're seeing the lampposts now, you know, in areas of London, that's happening quite a bit now, but also probably more in the rural areas. That's where it needs to happen, right?
The infrastructure is one thing in terms of the actual points, is then the availability.
Yeah,
it's then working. Them actually working.
Yeah, yeah.
You combine that with, you know, costs, and this is where, you know, consumer confidence is absolutely taking away as a result.
there's a great Facebook group for it's EVANI, so it's like a Facebook page in Northern Ireland for anybody's got an electric vehicle.
Yeah,
and a guy had written a bit of a story. Maybe 2 weeks ago. So we're driving an electric vehicle. I think it was the Peugeot 2008. So it'll maybe do 150 or something on a full charge. And he got into Belfast, desperately needing to charge, drove around 7 charge points.
Wow.
All done. All dead. Couldn't be used. And he ran out of battery.
Oh my.
And you know, that is a challenge. And, you know, thankfully we're starting to see a wee bit of progress in NI. There is quite a lot of Teslas on the road. Tesla do have their own dealership, and they've eventually just opened up superchargers. And they've announced last weekend that they're, as well as in Belfast, they're going to open one up like Enniskillen direction. So in many ways, you can travel the full length of the country, which is great if you've got a Tesla. But we're seeing a lot more of Maxwell. So I don't know if there's a Maxwell in the UK, but or in the mainland. Well, actually, it's maybe not the mainland. Northern Ireland's the mainland. Gary McAdam would be smacking me in the back of the head. But you know, Maxwell are a big fuel station in NI, and they're kind of the first ones to really start to adopt superchargers and fast chargers in Northern Ireland. For far too long it has been driven by the local government, and we haven't really had a local government now for a year or more, but on-street charging and off-street charging is free in Northern Ireland the whole way. It's, you know, you've got your ESB charge card, hit it a bop. You could sit there for 3 days. You could plug your car in, leave it for 3 days, and there's no impact on you whatsoever.
Wow.
Yet if you cross the border into the south of Ireland, if you over 45 minutes, they charge you. So they charge you, I think it's £5 for 15 minutes.
So an idle fee.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Effectively blocking a charger.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it happens for, you know, far too long. People rock up to all day chargers, plug the cars in, yeah, and then just clear off for the day.
Yeah,
yeah, it's no difference. So we were at a session we held in Manchester. I won't name the hotel, to roll out our Insight induction. And just so happens to that very point. So it's a very busy location near the airport. So I pull up, there's nowhere to park apart from electric charging bay.
Well, he's gone back to GA-sit.
And I'm actually next to Mr. Hart. I see his car there, so I pull into that space. Yet upon check-in, I check with reception. There's no, you know, they advise no issue with parking. I can leave it there overnight. But to my point, you know, me and Craig are taking up two of four available charging points for that whole hotel.
Just for our listeners, I was charging.
Yes, it was.
But no, you got a point.
By the time I arrived,
were you charging your plug? Were you charging your plug-in hybrid?
Correct.
Charging his phone.
His phone.
So to that very point, you know, the hotel changed.
Yeah.
That they actually implement and manage those charge points moving forward as well. So
it does make
it fraught with concerns.
Yeah, it does make. I was thinking, like, I was trying to Google whether or not where we're recording this today has got a charger. So like, I'll double check because I wanted to charge up. So. Costing wise charging. So at home, 7 hours last night, 250 miles, cost me £16. Not too bad. And then when I charged on my way up this morning, I stopped for 20 minutes, say 70 miles maybe, just under £10.
Okay.
So there's the comparison there around paying a premium for using that network.
Do you always go to a Tesla supercharger?
Yes, always.
And is that because they're always half empty?
It's because they work. You can get a stall, and I've got that app. You just plug it straight in. You don't need to muck around.
So charging at home, 250 miles for £16. Matt, 250 miles on the X5. What would that cost?
How much diesel does that take?
250 miles on the X5.
£50?
£45.
Okay, so still a considerable
difference. When you think about that as well as tax,
yeah,
it's still a saving, obviously, isn't it? Not only that, it's what you're not putting into the atmosphere.
That's it.
Very true.
All those fossil fuels you're burning,
yeah,
cruising around wheels,
2025 chance,
damaging all those wee trees,
ruining the green scenery.
At least Craig can, you know, have a clean conscience.
Yeah,
you know, he can tell little Lenny he's not damaging the environment. And
the penguins, the penguins home, the penguins home. Home. Yeah,
yes.
We're in the pervy penguins' homes.
Very true.
I can sleep well at night knowing I'm doing the same, protecting the wee penguins.
Even if you can't get to your next destination,
I just don't go anywhere.
To the shop and back.
The school run, and that's the tank used. You're joking.
Yeah,
dead serious. In fact, used car prices for the first month in a million years, they've actually fallen according to Auto Trader. So
I thought they fell last month.
I don't think they did.
They did by 0.4%.
They did. Yeah, they did.
£50 the used market.
On Auto Trader?
No, sorry.
Yes.
Based on cap HPI.
Aye, so cap HPI across this last 6 or 7 months has fallen probably 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
4 months.
Whereas Auto Trader hasn't at all. But actually, in the last month, it actually, for the first time in forever, it has fallen.
Wow. What's it by how much? Sorry?
The price of used cars and car dealer forecourts fell in November, according to the latest data from Auto Trader. However,
used car retail prices remain stable and continue following typical seasonal trends. The data, which is based on circa 900,000 daily price observations. Typical used car in November was 17,801, marking a 4.7% year-on-year increase on a like-for-like basis.
So they did say that 0.4% dip
is
normal and expected at this time of the year.
But it didn't dip last year. It didn't dip the year before. So it just it points further to a return to normality, really, within the used car market.
Whilst down 2% on last year's record level.
Exactly.
That's where it is. Is it a fair comparison, right? You're not comparing apples for apples, are you?
comparing 1 year versus the next at the minute is just, it's an impossible task.
What's interesting though, volume of advert views up 11%. Mm-hmm. So consumers are still on there, right? They're still clicking, looking at those adverts. I suppose it goes down to if any retailers out there listening, make sure those adverts are of a high quality. Absolutely. It's as simple as that.
And another interesting piece I was looking at. So for those of you who are listening who've seen our insight dashboards, I was doing a bit of play around yesterday with our new internal insights dashboard, yes. looking at forecourt utilization. So this is where the number of vehicles sitting live on a dealer's forecourt versus their forecourt capacity.
Right. Yeah, I've seen.
Sitting at 72%. So that's quite a lot of empty spaces out there at the minute. Mm. So quite keen to understand whether those empty spaces are intentional empty spaces where dealers are just sort of sitting back going, just going to see where the market goes across the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Because of everything we're kind of have experienced over the last number of months, or whether it is still a challenge in getting the right stock for their forecourt. Don't know what you boys think about that.
I can't really say, is it, you know, I would imagine if I was a car retailer in the used space, especially in this current climate, it would kind of keep me awake at night. Obviously, we know the standard stuff around buying with data, you know, pricing live to market, quality advertising, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, all of those standard stuff that we've been banging the drum about for ages. But I suppose I would still have that little kind of bit of worry, like, is it just going to drop off? Like, over Christmas, is everyone just going to say, right, boom, no spend, don't need a new car till the new year? And that would make me think, knowing my cost to stop per day, you know, my break-even day, all of that stuff, if I've sold three or four and I've got three or four gaps on my forecourt and there's not really anything out there that I want to get at the moment, am I going to fill it for the sake of it? Or am I going to keep that money?
Year on year, historically, you would have seen car dealers stocking up ready for the January window.
Yeah.
But I generally don't think you'll see that this year.
It actually happened this time last year. So the big dealer groups pulled back and didn't stock the forecourts, because typically, you know, in my experience, probably coming out of October into November would be when lookers would really have filled their used car stock holdings, not with the intention of selling them off in November, December, but for their big January sale. Can't remember what you said. It used to be Renault to Go. Can't remember what they called it in the other franchises, but, you know, it was a mainstay of their business every single year. You know, the likes of Virtue and Arnold Clark all did something very, very similar. But last year, there was a real kind of slowdown, a real kind of pullback from the market from those big dealer groups. Not sure if the same thing is happening now. Don't know if the supply is still there in the same way in the used car market.
What about you, Matt? So if you were running a car dealership right now, in the sunny hills of Wales, would you be wanting to keep that stock full? Where would you be at?
Absolutely, subject to the availability of in-demand stock, as we talk about, right? Those higher retail rating stock items. Absolutely, if they were available. You know, people who don't capture that now is a chance to lead in that space, in my opinion. Appreciate, you know, Auto Trader have shared, you know, they've seen a slowdown now from last month, average days to sell 25, I say in October to November, actually 30 days, so a 5-day slower period to sell. But I would be of the mindset to stock those more in demand if they are available. Because it doesn't, theoretically, it doesn't stop. And I'll go back to the adage that has been the same, you know, for year on year, you know, Boxing Day and the 27th.
Yes.
It's the busiest 2 days of consumer traffic on Auto Trader.
I think also a lot of other retail websites get an increase over those 2 days. You think everyone's got a smartphone in their hand, sat on the sofa full of Christmas dinner, right?
Correct. Yeah, and you could, you know, what are active buyers in at that time? I would take on board that, but you know, that consumer life cycle of search to purchase. You know, so to answer your question, I would certainly be stocking at my forecourt with those in demand stock items are available.
Yeah, here's a question for you, Matt. Right, so imagine you've got a pot of money that next week you could start your dealership up with.
Okay.
And you have got to think about a stocking policy around what you want to put on your forecourt. Talk to me about how you would approach that. Would you want to stick with particular brands, or would you go around buying based on retail ratings? How would you do it?
So it's a great question. And actually, that's just a champagne.
It's 12 o'clock. Pizza's opened its first Stella.
Time for the beer. Yeah.
Is it cold?
Full on celebration.
He's leaving, so he's...
Leaving with Matt to run her own dealership. Isn't that right, Matt?
That is correct, yes.
I've let the cat out of the bag, Matt.
Oh, no.
So tell us about our dealership, Matt. What are we going to do?
The plan has been put in place. No. to your question around being manufacturer specific, absolutely not. If you think about the current manufacturers, historically, that's how they would have operated, only have stocked their own brands.
Yeah, but you're Matt Howell's car, so you can do whatever you want.
Of Matt and Pete Motors, we would absolutely, stock what is in demand, right? So what are those?
So no preference to a brand.
Higher retail rating. And you think about the retail price point.
Yeah.
You know, I would certainly be looking into what is the optimum retail price point to appeal to mass consumer around that.
Yeah.
In terms of consideration for that stock profile. And the thing for me is it's always about return on investment, right? So it's not, the old adage, the more stock you have, the more you'll sell. That isn't actually...
Unless, of course, you've got a really in-demand product that you're selling, right?
Well, very true. So it's about getting that quicker return on investment, buying the in-demand stocks, pricing to market, as we often talk about on a daily basis, price it to the optimum sweet spot.
Yeah.
Working retail back.
Yeah.
We talk about, you could start to think about category of stock. It's that preparation time frame from purchase to being retail ready.
Yeah.
We have seen that, whereas the supply hasn't been there, it has taken 14 days, beyond 14 days for some dealers.
Well, take that into account with auto traders average 30 days to sell.
Correct.
You're talking 45 days here. Imagine, for the listeners out there or who have you, that are aware of a break-even day, your break-even day could be 55.
Yeah.
We're talking skinny kind of, unless, of course, you've got a real trim setup when it comes to getting that vehicle ready to go as early doors as possible, right?
Absolutely. If you've got a 14-day prep time on 55 days average, 25% into your, your days in stock. So, they're the key elements for me, pricing those, sourcing those in-demand stocks. And it's not being stereotypical in terms of where you source as well, not going to the same channels. There's a number of avenues out there to source stock, so it's diversifying where you would source stock from. As well, anything you would add to that, Pete?
Just understanding your market, and if your market is sub 10k stock, don't be buying a Ferrari because you think it's going to sell.
See, this is interesting. Sorry, I just to jump in here.
Really glad I get my point across. There,
so just a quick one. I want it for the listeners. Just go back to that your market element. So were we talking more local here, or how are you angling?
So
that
you think about in today's climate. Sorry, let's take a slight step back. So we think about during COVID, consumer behavior changed immeasurably, where customers would travel the length and breadth of the country for the right vehicle.
Yeah.
But actually what we've seen in the last 4 or 5 months is customers wanting to buy locally.
Yeah.
A lot more leads are being generated directly in the showrooms than kind of ever before. So it's just about understanding what is in demand within your local area, 50-mile radius. Right. In fairness, if you live within Northern Ireland, you can travel anywhere within an hour. Yeah, within an hour. So you've got to think about the wider kind of Northern Ireland marketplace. But, out with that kind of case in point, think about a 50-mile radius. Alan Sugar always says, smell what sells, but be very, very careful if you operate a used car business in that way, because sooner or later there becomes a tipping point. If you find yourself doing really well with, say, at Leon's, and you keep buying them, sooner or later you're going to fill the demand in your area with those Saint Leons, to the extent that you could end up with a forecourt of Saint Leons going nowhere because you've kind of filled those desires. So it's just about understanding where the demand is, what's selling, what's in demand, using as much data as you can get your hands on. If you're partnering with Auto Trader, as painful as their prices are, the data that sits within that is, you know,
valuable.
Absolutely, absolutely. You cannot get that richness of data anywhere else. And I know if I had my own forecourt pitch, that would be how I'd run my business. Data day in, day out, understand when is the time to be moving your prices, making sure that you're always where you need to be to make sure your vehicles are as attractive as possible for consumers. But knowing what your market is, you know, like I said, don't, you know, if your local area does suit vehicles less than 10 grand, don't think you're Tom Hartley and start buying Bentleys and Porsches and everything else that isn't going to appeal to 95% of your marketplace, because that will cause you a cash flow problem. You'll be sitting with a forecourt with stock going nowhere. That's the last thing you want. Just keep it as simple as you can.
It's interesting when we look at a year-on-year marketplace. So from say a used car dealer perspective, around this time last year, was it easier? Were those vehicles just flying off the shelf? You know, off the back of everyone being in lockdowns and people just wanting to do changes. A year on, we're probably in a very different situation now from a climate perspective.
Yeah, we can relate to that. We were talking a year ago around dealer partners not maximizing on profitability, right?
Yeah.
So working trader, you know, entering the market where they were maximized on profitability, that's absolutely changed now. So they have to be conscious of that. I mean, the days in stock piece, to your earlier point, having a strategy, you know, that by which you reprice, understanding your break-even days, that point that you're no longer making money, and have an exit strategy for that asset, you know, if that's trading out of that and replacing that. And regardless of your investment in data, there'll be assets that will get to that stage. So it's being mindful of that. You know, but that's the sort of approach that I would take. It's good night from
me. So I'm just going to do a couple of fillers here.
No, you're not. No.
Sorry. No.
How far are we in?
So we're 22 minutes into this session.
Okay, so that's 50,
yeah.
50 on. 50
that's
on
what
minutes.
I thought. Too so long. I was
so,
going to
so,
do.
So we're 50 odd minutes in. And we still haven't heard about the bed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Does it squeak?
No comment.
You have no
it
idea.
Did. It wasn't
there. I haven't a clue. I'll have to ask that. the bed's comfy.
Is it?
It's all right. Yeah, it's not too bad, to be fair.
That's why you're late this morning.
Do you get up? Because obviously beds take a bit. Easy horse. Beds obviously take a wee bit of time to, you know, almost
bed in.
To kind of acclimatize to. But, you know, I found, you know, over the number of years that I've, you know, bought a couple of new beds, the first couple of nights you're like, oh, that was horrendous. Didn't enjoy that at all. But like by night four, night five, oh, that was a really good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Are you in the position where you're kind of used to it? How long have you had it?
So probably had it about a month now. Should we do a little bit of a background?
How was the aftercare?
Right, so let's do a bit of a background on this. I might as well tell the viewers about it. So we ordered a new mattress, cost a lot of money. They said it would settle after about 40 days. Bought it as a medium, and it just was not giving.
Too soft?
No. It was not giving. So we kind of said, look, we've left it this amount of days. It's not giving, blah, blah, blah. They said, okay, no worries. You know, what do you want to do? So we said, we'll go back into the shop. We'll have a look at a new one. Anyway, they'd put a new line out of beds, mattresses, right? So our one that we had bought, there was a newer version of it, but they downgraded it. They put some more additional in the line. So we ended up spending a bit more money and getting an upgraded one, as you naturally fall into. I think the first one was a firm. Anyway, so we went for the second one, which was a medium. Anyway, yeah, it is really nice and soft, almost too soft initially, but then you get used to it. And now it is, it's comfy.
Firm as a backbreaker, like?
No. It's really, really comfy. 10-year guarantee on it, ready to rock and roll.
So the firm one was too firm?
Yeah, it didn't give within that period. So we thought, do we either stick or twist?
So you went in, the charging more money and upgraded
no,
you?
No. I chose to pay more money.
Yes, because they upgraded you. So you went in, found a really good salesperson who upsold you?
No. He completely, I'm not into all of that stuff. He left us to it. He said, choose, I'll sort out whatever you need to, whether you go down, whether you go up, it's up to you. But, you know, he gave confidence in his product range, right? And, we chose to go with the slightly better one. Well, it was like two up within the range.
And is it a deeper mattress than your last one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're talking like...
You need like a step ladder to get off. Well, you wasn't because you're like 8 feet tall.
No. It's a deep mattress.
Probably because up to your knees.
Yeah, yeah, but it's comfy.
You're not tall. Peter Crouch.
It's comfy. Well, I hope you found that.
There you go, folks. There will be pictures. There will be pictures being emailed to all three of our listeners of Craig in his bed. Oh, he got his teeth done too, folks.
Some Turkish veneers. Guys, unfortunately, this is a podcast, but if you could see me, you would need sunglasses.
Unreal teeth. Just delicious.
So, listeners, we do always hope you enjoy our podcasts. If you would like to come onto the show and be a guest, you can always reach out to us via the various mediums that we upload the podcast onto.
Reach out to us at... dealer.opt@closebrothers.com. There is a fee which can be paid through me directly if you pick up with me. I know I'm leaving, like.
John, thank you for listening to this episode, the last one with Pete. We wish you a warm exit. That sounds so wrong.
Warm. Warm.
We've got a minute left. We wish you a happy new life outside of
class. Peter, we'd like to say thanks very much for all you've given to the Dobcast over the last year. It's been hugely enjoyable having you on it. We'll not really miss your slabbern. And we will get you back in the future, Peter, if that's okay with you. All the best. Goodbye. That's a mess.
Sounds like Philip Norton.
Thank you for coming, horse.